You've been listening to The Pandemic, Loss and Racial Inequity on Making Contact. For other shows and more information about this episode, visit radioproject.org. I'm Anita Johnson. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
Tune in to KBOO on Thursday, December 31st at 8 p.m. for KBOO's New Year's Eve extravaganza. Join KBOO DJs as they bid 2020 goodbye and kick off the new year with positive vibes. You'll hear sets from Diablo, Top Dolla, Kabloom, and more. Again, that's KBOO's New Year's Eve extravaganza from Thursday, December 31st at 8 p.m. to Friday, January 1st at 5:30 a.m. Bring in the new year here with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good evening. You are listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns. And we're here tonight with Barbara Minnie. Is that correct?
Barbara Marie Minnie, yes.
Barbara Marie Minnie, thank you. Welcome to Transpositive, Barbara.
Well, thank you for inviting me to participate. This is very exciting.
Thanks. So I met you on the Facebook group Transgender Writers, which is a really great group. We've had quite a few transgender folks on from that group, and I just wanted to I'd seen that you do a lot of writing and you've done a lot of publishing, and you're also involved in a lot of projects. So I wanted to have a chance to talk to you a little bit about your story, and maybe if you feel like I'd share some of your writing with us.
Let me start by telling you a little bit about myself, I guess. Transitioned until very late in life, at the age of 63, actually, after repressing my true gender identity for over 60 plus years. I began writing when I was in college in the 1970s. I wrote poetry, I wrote some short stories, and I had some success in terms of them being published in the campus literary magazine. And I think I even participated in a reading in my senior year. And then basically, I got caught up in the remainder of my education and my career, and I really didn't write for the next 35 or 36 years. Then when I retired in 2014, after dealing with some personal issues involving the death of my father, I started writing a novel. It was an erotic novel, and I did submit it to a publisher, and the publisher liked it, but didn't think it was long enough. So I kind of set that aside, and I started thinking, you know, poetry has always been my forte, my strong suit. And I'm going through a life-changing episode in my life right now, transitioning from male to female. And this is perfect to write poetry about. So basically, I started writing poetry about my transition. And I started attending open mics, identifying myself as a transgender woman who wrote about her thoughts, feelings, struggles, and passions as a transgender woman. And I was very well received in the poetry community, which I was a little surprised by, but I guess I shouldn't have been. And then I entered a contest. There's a local publishing company here in Akron, Ohio, that has a yearly contest, the Poetry is Life Book Award. So I submitted my first manuscript in September of last year, 2019. And to my surprise, my manuscript was selected as the winner of the 2020 Poetry is Life Book Award. And it was published in May of this year. It is entitled, If There's No Heaven, and it basically chronicles the first 2 years of my life living as the woman that I now know I was always intended to be. After, as I said, repressing my true gender identity for over 60 plus years. And I tried to make the poetry accessible, but I also wanted it to be raw, authentic. It showed my vulnerability. It showed my weaknesses, it showed my strengths, and it also showed my triumphs. And you know, since it came out in May, I've been trying to promote the book in this pandemic in which we live, because obviously the personal appearances and poetry readings I had were all canceled. So I've been attending poetry readings online and doing what I can to promote myself and my work, and in the process, promote transgender women in general by presenting myself as an example of a transgender woman.
Thank you. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO. We're talking tonight with Barbara Marie Minney. Barbara is a transgender poet and has produced a few books, and we're going to be talking to Barbara tonight some more about her transition and hearing some of her works. Barbara, could you tell us a little bit about your transition? You know, when did you decide to transition, and how did that go for you? Could you talk about it a little bit?
Absolutely. As I said, when I retired as an attorney after practicing law for 36 years, it was a huge adjustment because my life had been my career. That it was all consuming. But I knew that there was something different about me. And of course, you know, I had cross-dressed from time to time, beginning as a teen when I, you know, got into my mother's closet. which is the way I think a lot of us start. And I cross-dressed on and off. And then when I retired, I got more serious about the cross-dressing. And I also started gender counseling. And the counselor that that I met with, I met with her for 2 years, and she was, I don't know, the fifth or sixth counselor I'd been to. And her specialty was gender counseling. So we just connected right away. And she literally, I write a poem in my book that says she saved my life, but that's not really what happened. She helped me find my life. She helped me answer the question that we all ask from time to time, who am I? And she helped me find that answer. I am Barbara. And I began counseling in September of 2016. By January of 2017, I had started hormone replacement therapy, and I fully transitioned in September of that year. And I also ought to mention that I'm a happily married transgender woman. My wife and I have been married for 39 plus years. So it was a transition for her too, and we had to reconstruct our relationship and look at it in a different light. And I will have to say it was a struggle at times, but it was mostly my struggle, not hers, because she's a strong, independent woman, and she provided me a lot of support. In fact, a couple of years ago, we presented a workshop at a transgender conference here entitled How to Have a Successful Transgender Marriage. And we also made a video of that and posted it on YouTube. Same. It's on, I don't have the exact link, but it is on my personal page on YouTube, Barbara Marie Menny. And if you do a search, a successful transgender marriage, it should come up on YouTube. And it's about an hour video based on the workshop that my wife and I did, and we recorded it here in our home and then posted it on YouTube in the hopes of helping other couples like ourselves.
What do you think are some of the keys to having a successful and happy transgender marriage?
Well, I think you have to have a strong relationship to begin with and a strong foundation of love and respect. And we had gone through, you know, we've been married for 39 plus years. So, you know, we went through some struggles, alcoholism, my depression, and not attempted suicides, but close to attempted suicides a couple of times. Mm-hmm. In my life, because I was just really an unhappy person for most of my life until I discovered who I really, really was. And the way we did it, we spent a lot of time online and with books, reading about other couples, reading about transgender women in general, reading about how a relationship can survive. And I think we had to realize and understand that it just wasn't my transition. It was Marilyn's transition too, because she was going through something as well as I. And we had to support, respect each other, and give each other the space that we needed to process what we were going through. And the toughest times for me and her were the times when I was trying to get my estrogen levels adjusted, and my emotions would be on a roller coaster up and down, and I would start having doubts as to whether this was really the direction that I should be going. And fighting those demons was the hardest part for me, and the hardest part for her was seeing me or dealing with me fighting those demons and those doubts. So, you know, I think, and having strong support around you, you know, outside of your relationship was very important to us too. We have some very, very close friends who are all cisgender, who were very supportive and encouraging during this transition, and are still our best friends today.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking.
So you went through the process of transition, including dealing with issues that you and your spouse had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And tell me more about your transition, please.
I started off slowly. I started off actually dressing in an androgynous type of way. And I didn't wear hair at that point in time, but I usually had some kind of hat on. And I was generally still identified as a female, even in that get-up or costume or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. And then my wife and I had a discussion. And the discussion went something like this. You know, going back and forth between male and female is not working in our relationship. So we need to do something. And she encouraged me to fully transition. And it was actually our anniversary is in August. And back then we went away every year for our anniversary to this special place in Southern Ohio. And she wanted me to go as a man. And I said, fine. And that's the last time we appeared in public as a man and a woman. When we came back from that trip, we had our discussion. That's when I fully transitioned, starting dressing and wearing hair and trying to look as feminine as I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
It was a process, but we came out of it stronger and more in love, and our relationship solider than it has mm-hmm. ever been. And I think the big thing is, I am the happiest that I have ever been. That has to do with living authentically as, you know, the person that I was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. We're talking tonight with Barbara Marie Minney. Barbara is telling us her transition story. She's a transgender woman who transitioned in her 60s after a long career. And we're just talking about her transition, and we're also going to be talking about her writing. So, Barbara, what role did your writing play in your transition? Was it an important part of your transition?
Yes, I think it was. I didn't realize it at the time, but documenting my transition through my poetry was very therapeutic. And as it turned out, it has touched the lives of others and changed the thinking of others that I have come in contact with through my poetry. Even people who are not transgender have told me how much they relate to the poems in my book. And they pointed out specific poems that they have, you know, seen themselves in or seen portions of their life in. And I think that's remarkable that I can connect with people who are not even transgender but have gone through some of the same struggles that I have in their lives without the transgender component, obviously. And that has been the most satisfying and meaningful part of my work to me, is being able to connect with so many people on so many different levels by putting myself out there, presenting myself as a transgender woman, and basically bearing my soul through my poetry.
Well, would you care to share any of your poetry, Barbara? Because I would love to have a chance to share some of that with our audience.
Sure.
Great, thank you. Again, we're talking today with Barbara Marie Minney. Barbara is a transgender poet. and she's a member of the Facebook group Transgender Writers. We've had several writers from that group on the show over the years, including playwrights and published authors. So
I'm going to read the first poem in my book, If There's No Heaven. And let me tell you the story of this poem. For a while during my transition, we were attending a weekly dinner with other transgender women and my wife. And I got into a discussion one evening because there was a lot of negativity in this group. And I finally said, you know, I was very quiet, and they finally said, what's wrong? And I said, well, you know, I'm not getting the support that I need from this group anymore. And the response of the leader of the group was, well, you don't need support. You live a cookie cutter life. You don't have any real problems like the rest of us do. And she got up and walked out. And that was the last time I saw her. So the poem is called Trans Privilege. I'm not sure that there is such a thing as transgender privilege. You rarely see those two words used together. I live what some might call a privileged life. I'm not a person of color. I have a wife and some friends that stayed, a nice home, car, and resources. And I like shopping for designer purses at outlet stores and on eBay. Privilege does come at a price, a lot of years struggling within myself, consumed by work and commitments not always of my own making, never really living or taking time to be in the moment, always outside of myself looking in at what I didn't really know, nor did I really care. I have not faced the inequities or the brutality of my sisters and brothers. Their bruised and battered bodies, beaten, shot, and stabbed, lying unclaimed in morgues across the world. All they wanted was to live their truth. That is all I want, too. Yes, I might live a privileged life, but my problems are as real as the next person's, at least to me. My pain is as real as anyone else's, at least to me. I still hurt from the sting of depression, sadness, disappointment, and betrayal. I still cry myself to sleep at night.
It's kind of a silly conversation, like who has more privilege? I mean, it's within the context of being transgender. I mean, within the world of like transitioning and having to like, I don't think people understand what it takes to transition, especially for people who were assigned male at birth. I mean, you have to go against every stereotype that the culture holds out there about what it means to be a person. And you have to go against your training. For a lot of folks when they transition, especially for folks who were assigned male at birth and are transitioning to female, they end up giving up their families, their spouses, sometimes their jobs, you know, and they while they're in the position of transitioning, that we often face like a very real threat of violence, because transgressing what it means to be a body that has been assigned male and to become a body that's female is, for some reason, our society has a lot of hostility against that. And so I feel like anyone who decides to transition, like the last thing that we need to do is to be talking about people who are transitioning as privileged, you know, because it's like, there's just almost no truth in that. I mean, transgender people are privileged in the sense that we're claiming our identity and living our truths. And so by having the courage to live our truths and to be joyful, we have the privilege of joy and we have the privilege of self-acceptance. But, you know, those are hard won, and they're not privileges. They're truths. And there's a difference between a privilege and the truth.
Absolutely. And I have kind of a unique perspective because I, whether rightly or wrongly, I spent the first 60 plus years of my life as a privileged white male. And, you know, I could tell that I was taking a step backwards on the ladder of privilege, if you will, when I became a female. I could see a difference in the way I was treated, the difference the way I was perceived. I lost friends. I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of groups that we used to belong to. But to me, that was the price I had to pay for living authentically, living my truth, living as the person that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And that was a price worth paying, in my opinion. But I know that a lot of people had it a lot harder than I did. And I have empathy for right. that.
Exactly. That's the thing. There's no contest for victimhood. Like, who has the most victimhood? It's not even about that. It's about, you know, affirming our dignity as people. So, like, I know the conversation that you're having or that you had in the poem, because it happens a lot in support groups. Like, who has the most victimhood? And, you know, it's not that people shouldn't be acknowledged for their suffering. People suffer, they definitely do. But when we're getting together with groups of like-minded people for support, it's not really a contest. What we're doing within the context of the queer community is looking to our brothers and sisters for mutual support. So rather than saying, oh, you have more privilege than me, I feel like it should be more like, oh, hey, how can I help you out? How can I support you? How can we see the commonalities that we share? Because we're in the same community. We're, you know, I mean, to the world outside of us, like to the cisgender heteronormative world, we're all a bunch of freaks. It doesn't matter like who has more victimhood. They see us all as a bunch of freaks and they treat us that way. I mean, they're trying to pass laws to make our existence more difficult. They try to take away our healthcare. You know, mm-hmm. they we're not represented. I mean, we're treated as marginal. So it's like, regardless of what category of queer we are, we're treated as marginal by the outside world. We're looked at as something that's less than, like almost uniformly. People who look at us as less than don't really make a lot of gradations of difference between who's more of less than the other.
No, I agree with everything you've said, which is even more reason why we should be coming together and embracing our similarities, not right. our differences.
Right, we need to be.
Right, and I, you know, to be honest, I fully intended to live my life stealthily as a woman. And then I started writing and performing my poetry. So now, you know, I'm sure people, when they refer to me as that, you know, transgender woman that writes poetry or the trans poet. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'll take that. I'll embrace that identity because I want to be out there. I'm not trying to represent anyone other than myself. But what I'd like to do is, by presenting myself, representing that we are just normal people who want to be and live authentically and truthfully as the people we are. That's all there is to it. And
right.
What I've been thinking about a lot lately is how to collaborate. And I've had a discussion with some of the other artists in the area here, how we can collaborate as artists, how we can use our talents to bring people together, to bring healing. And we haven't quite grasped or wrapped our heads around how to do that. But it's something that has been on my mind for the last, well, probably this whole year, since I haven't had much else to think about with the pandemic.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that a transgender person would be the person who's thinking about how do we bridge our communities, you know? I think that's like a role that we play. I mean, that we can serve, because we have a very unique perspective on the world. And we see how, like, you can bridge many different kinds of worlds at the same time. You know, you can bridge, like, heteronormative and queer. You can bridge male and female. You can bridge black and white. I mean, we understand through our own transition, which is an act of catharsis. Through our own transition, we understand that it's possible to bring many different things together, you know, Republican and Democrat, conservative and liberal. Like, there's a commonality that we all have. And those of us who have gone through that experience of catharsis understand how much more in common we all have than what we have that's different.
And I think that's what we need to emphasize. That's what we need to dwell on. And I don't know that that's happening right now. I think the opposite is happening. We are emphasizing our differences and not trying to find common ground. And I'd like to see, you know, more artists. And I'm not just talking poets and writers. I'm talking about visual artists, you know, come together to try to use our talents to bring people together. And I think it's possible. I'm just not sure whether it's feasible or not.
Yeah. I mean, the world is very complex. It takes a long time to do anything, you know.
It does, and you have to be patient. I'm not the most patient person in the world. So yeah. I've got to, you know, work at it, think about it, which I am very good about, because I spend, as a writer, and you probably do too, spend a lot of time in your head thinking about things and thinking about how they'll look on paper if you, you know, if they escape from your head and get on the paper.
I love that feeling.
So yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's like when it lands on the paper, it's so great. Like, sometimes when I'm writing and I look at it, I'm just like, where did that come from? Like, I don't even recognize that, you know? And it's just, I love that feeling. That's like, to me, that's the best feeling. Like, when something really comes out of you that you, like, you know, you need to say, and you're thinking about it, but you haven't found words for it. And then you write it, and it says what you needed to say. And it's a great feeling.
That's the most amazing and incredible part of being a writer to me. I've been working on a poem this week. I usually don't write really long poems, but this is going to be a really long one in three parts. And I'm amazed at some of the things that have come out of my head and made it on paper. I don't know where they come from.
But yeah.
I'm certainly grateful that they're there and that I can pull them out and put them down in my writing. And I've been writing, in addition to poetry, I've been writing more essays and articles, a couple of which have been published. Recently, I think I actually posted a link to this on the Transgender Writers today. I've been involved in a project here in Ohio called Inside Out Trans Art Project. And it's transgender or non-binary individuals who do a portrait of themselves, a self-portrait. And I originally got involved because there's going to be an accompanying anthology, and they're partnering the self-portrait people up with poets. So they sent me one of the self-portraits and I wrote a poem to go along with it. And then they asked me, to my surprise, if I would be interested in doing my own self-portrait. And I have no artistic talent whatsoever. But I said, sure, I'll give it a try. And you know, I had a Zoom session with the creator, and he talked about the various art forms you can use. And I, you know, took a picture of myself that I kind of liked and turned it into a self-portrait. And that in and of itself was cathartic. First writing the poem that accompanied the other person's self-portrait, and then doing my own and writing the accompanying statement that went with my own self-portrait. That helped me to even learn even more about myself. Mm-hmm. That was a very transformative experience for me that I did not expect at all. And I'm very glad that I did it. And I'm very glad that I'm participating in that project.
We're talking with Barbara Marie Minney. This is Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Transpositive is a show which upholds the dignity and the inherent worth of transgender and non-binary people. And tonight we're talking with Barbara. Barbara is a writer and a poet who transitioned in her 60s and is just telling us the story of what it takes to transition and what writing means to her, and you know, the joys of coming to your truth. So, you know, one of the things that in our conversation a minute ago, Barbara, I wanted to say, just to finish the thought, was that, you know, as a student of history, I think it's just a miracle that we can even have this conversation now. I mean, change is slow. Things really do happen slow, and there's a lot that needs to still happen. But to think that, like, we're having a conversation between two transgender women that we're able to broadcast on the radio airwaves is something that couldn't have happened for most of the last, you know, several thousand years of human history. Not only because the technology wasn't available, but because it just wasn't really socially accepted throughout most of Western European history for transgender people to have almost any kind of prominence at all. You know, it was just not even, our existence was not treated as something that was even real, you know? That's part of why it's still shocking to a lot of people. Like, when we just acknowledge our reality, people really have a hard time with it. And but we have enough acceptance and we have enough rights that we can actually have this conversation. And I think that's kind of a miracle, honestly.
Absolutely. I was thinking the very same word popped into my mind. It's really a miracle that mm-hmm. we can have a conversation and be on the airwaves. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things, not to change the topic, but one of the things that I think about as a writer, and I don't know whether you think about it too, is whether the success that I have had is because I'm transgender, because I'm unique, or is it because I truly have talent as a writer? And that's mm-hmm. I guess that's my low self-esteem peeking through from time to time. You know, all of my poetry is not about being transgender. And a lot of my poetry that has been published has not been about being transgender. I grew up in West Virginia, in Appalachia. So I've started writing a lot about, yes, a beautiful place.
Where in West Virginia, or where did you grow up?
I was born in Parkersburg. We lived in Vienna, which is right along the Ohio River. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time in Gilmer County, where both my grandparents lived, one on a farm, one in the city. And that has, you know, I found myself looking back more and more for topics or subjects for my poetry and my essays too. I published an essay on my website recently about my childhood growing up in West Virginia, entitled Mountaineers Are Always Free. And it basically details, you know, my first 15 years of my life living in West Virginia. And there's so much beauty, not only in the landscape, but in the people too. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how much it really impacted me until I'm now at this stage in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back and embracing those moments that I had as a child, growing up, or spending summers on my grandparents' farm, or, you know, playing with my cousins and running around the hills and picking wild berries and, you know, doing all the stuff. I don't know, kids today probably don't even know what any of that is anymore, but I think it went a long way to shaping who I am today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that state. The only part of West Virginia I don't get is that little tiny section way up in the very tippy top that like goes into Maryland. And
oh, yes.
It's like, why is that there? It doesn't make any sense.
The panhandle, it is kind of shaped funny, for sure.
But yeah, it's such a beautiful state. I mean, we have friends in Charleston, and we moved here. My partner and I moved to Oregon from Tennessee, so Southern transplant. So we know a lot about Appalachian culture.
So you know what it is to grow up in Appalachia.
Yeah, we know what it means to love Appalachia and to leave Appalachia too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, well, could you read us another poem or two?
I would love to, and this is a perfect segue. This is a poem that I wrote about my father. And it's one of the first poems that I had published, actually, in an anthology. And it touches on the Appalachian experience a little bit. It's called Imperfect Strangers. It has been 3 years since you went away, and I'm just now getting around to mourning you. Is it a delayed reaction or just indifference? I guess I will never know. I just know this Christmas I missed you more than usual. You grew up a poor boy way back in a West Virginia holler on the other side of the creek that we would cross in the car, in a shack with no electricity or running water, a fireplace the only heat, a tin roof that sang in the rain, and a porch swing, wood worn thin by tired buttocks. The woods and mountains, your only toys, and a big feather bed that you would gently carry me to when my eyes could no longer stay open to listen to Grandpa's stories. You made something of yourself, just not what you had hoped. I never really knew you, the things that you did and saw, or the depth of your pain and disappointment, nor you mine. You only knew the boy, and the man you molded me to be, not the woman I've become, but you gave me the courage to become her. Mom never knew how much we were like, sharing the same heart. I still pray at night for signs of your presence, like the two mourning doves sitting side by side on the deck railing, you and Mom together. I will never forget how much you cried when she died. I guess after all these years, I am still craving your approval.
Yeah, fathers, boy, now there's a whole topic. That is a topic for a show. I need to do a whole show about fathers of transgender people. Yeah, that was a very respectful poem. You really gave your father a lot of positive praise there.
I did. I mean, he was a difficult man. He did not live to see my transition. But I don't think he would have approved of it, but I don't know for sure. He was very rigid in his thinking. He was a perfectionist, expected a perfection out of everyone else around him. He and my mom were both educators, so we were expected to excel in school, basically excel in everything we did, no matter what it was. He was very difficult to please. And when my mother died, he basically lost, I mean, they were married for over 50 years and basically lost his reason for living. And he lived for another 2 years. Mm-hmm. He went to a nursing home. basically starved himself to death and was dead in 6 weeks. So, you know, he was, he obviously didn't think that he had anything else left to live for. And it was difficult for me to grieve him. And because of the, I guess, a love-hate relationship that we had all throughout my life. But he was the first person in his family to go to college, the first person in his family to get an advanced degree. He paid for our education, and he did give us and my mother the tools for my brother and I to be successful in life, and he did the best he could, as did my mom, considering where they came from and what they grew up with. I'm grateful for everything that they did, and I try to hold that in my heart and not dwell on the difficult times that we had.
That's really sweet. That's so affirming to hear. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
How do you get along with your brother?
Well, my wife and I renewed our vows. It's been a little over 2 years ago now, as two women, and that's the last time I saw him. He made a brief appearance with his wife at our vow renewal ceremony, and I have not seen him since then. Nor have I talked to him. We send texts to each other on holidays, and that's about it. So I guess he's really not. It's called If There's No Heaven. It is available from Poetry Is Life Publishing, www.poetryislifepublishing.com. And all about my transition. One of the things, I don't know, I assume you probably have faced this too, because I know I have, being told that by various people that as a transgender woman, I'm not a real woman, and I can never be a real woman. So this poem is called Real Woman. I may never be accepted as a real woman. I have not walked a mile in their high heels, nor do I claim to. I'm not trying to misappropriate their womanhood, but I am laying claim to my own. I will never know the delights of being a little girl or the struggles of being a woman, but my own struggles are real and they matter. Womanhood chose me. I did not choose it. It was always inside me. It was always me, even when I did not claim it. I am a trans woman and may always have that qualifier. Dysphoria is what sets me apart. I will always look in the mirror and see remnants of the man I was.
That was great. I totally see why your poetry was selected. It's really good.
Thank you.
Just to address what you were saying earlier, you know, it could be true. I mean, transgender people sometimes are given, like, at least an open door. Like, they open the door, but once they open the door, you have to actually do the walking.
Yes.
You know, I mean, just because somebody like says, well, we're going to make sure to be inclusive and to reach out to you because you're transgender, doesn't mean that like you just get a free pass. I mean, you still have to work and create something that speaks to people, and it still has to like meet its level as a craft, you know? So if it's poetry, it still has to be good writing. You know, and
Yeah, and I'm beginning to understand that and accept that I am a good writer. I am a good poet. And I'm going to continue to produce good poetry and good writing.
That's great. I'm so glad to hear it. We're talking tonight again with Barbara Marie Minny. Barbara, we have about maybe 5 or 6 minutes left. Are there any poems that you haven't gotten to yet that you'd really like to share with us? Because I'd love to hear some more before we go.
Yeah, I can read one more. This has become kind of a signature piece. I read it quite a bit. And the book, I might say, is kind of a it kind of transitions, no pun intended, from the struggles to the triumphs. And this is about in the middle, and it's called Bubble Wrap. Sitting cross-legged on the floor, raw and exposed, arms wrapped tightly around my body, giving myself a hug. There's no one else around to do it. Searching for words of comfort that will clothe my naked emotions, lost somewhere in the fogginess of my brain. All I hear is, it is never enough. I am never enough. The past is never really past, especially the mistakes, haunting the halls of my mind long after they were made, or used like a war club, beating myself to a bloody pulp. Being hard on myself does not make me a better person, only defeated more. All I hear is, it is never enough. I am never enough. I have gone far beyond what my father thought I could. Doing my best was never good enough. Sometimes I dreamed of being perfect, but even that is not enough. Lying in bed in the dark, trying to go to sleep, mind racing like a hamster on a running wheel. When she reaches for my hand and tells me she loves me, my first thought is, why? How could anyone love me? All I hear is, it is never enough. I am never enough. I should swaddle myself in bubble wrap as protection against the world, but that would do no good. I would still be trapped with my own worst enemy in a cocoon of my own making, telling me it is never enough. I am never enough. I'm not even good enough to be trans with what I still have dangling between my legs. It is better to keep hidden so that I can live my life. If there's no heaven, it's all a waste of time anyway. I have found not caring anymore to sometimes be liberating.
Yeah, totally. Definitely. Wow, there's a lot in that poem to unpack.
Yes, there is. There is indeed.
Quite a poem to end on. It's a good thing we have at least a couple of minutes. I can ask you some questions.
Sure.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, are you a religious person? Are you not religious?
I'm a Christian. I actually help administer the transgender Christian group on Facebook. And I'm happy to be a part of that. I've been a part of that for a number of years now. We have not, my wife and I left organized religion about 25 years ago. And we're just now getting back into attending church through Zoom, obviously, and Facebook and streaming and whatnot. But we found an inclusive church in Akron that we become very interested in. And actually, we became involved in that church because they had a support group called Coming Out Christian for LGBTQ plus people who are Christian. And we started attending that group before the pandemic when we could do it. And that's how we got interested in possibly becoming members of the church. We haven't made it, but we're thinking about it.
Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil that we host here in Portland. I know how much religion and spirituality means to transgender folks. It's, for a lot of transgender people, it's an incredible source of comfort. And I really respect that. So,
and I don't know whether it's ironic or not, but when I transitioned, I found that my faith was stronger and my belief in God was stronger than at any other time in my life. I've always been spiritual, and we've done a lot of exploring, you know, Wicca and all kinds of different things. But it was always exploring. It was always searching. I didn't really find what I was looking for. And maybe now I have. I don't know.
That's so great. Gosh, there's so much in that poem. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to all the questions I have about that poem. But are you putting out any more books? Are you doing any more writing?
I'm doing writing. I am involved in a project called the Women of Appalachia Project, and I've been in their anthology the last 2 years, and we just did a reading, actually, and, you know, they usually do 6 or 8 readings a year, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. I would like to put out a second book. I think I have enough material to put it together. What I would like to do is collaborate with an artist that I know and include some of her paintings in the book. I've talked to her a little bit about it. I'm sure she would be receptive to that. And I just think it would be a great collaboration to combine art, you know, visual art and literary art, poetry. So yeah, I'm going to be putting together another manuscript. All I need to do is find a publisher, which is not always the easiest thing to do. They can find me at www.BarbaraMarieMinniPoetry.com. MINNEY.
Great.
That is my website.
Great. And we'll include that in the show notes. Thank you. Barbara Marie Minnie, she's a transgender poet here on Transpositive. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. This was a wonderful conversation.
Everyone has a sex and a gender.
People whose genders don't match their sex are called transgender.
I'm an activist.
I'm a nonprofit leader.
A P-flag mom.
I am a child of a transgender person.
I'm a radical feminist.
I'm a business person.
I'm a Baptist minister.
I'm a spouse.
A retired truck driver.
I'm a queer Chicana feminist.
I'm a college student.
A pastor.
I'm an ally.
I am an Indian American.
I'm a social worker.
An African American.
Pastor.
Wife. The partner.
Daughter of a transgender person.
And I am an ally.
And I am an ally.
We are allies.
An ally is someone who speaks with and acts with transgender people, not for them.
I support transgender rights.
I support transgender rights.
We support transgender rights.
Transgender people face overwhelming discrimination every day.
In public spaces, 52% of transgender people, like my neighbors, experience discrimination.
Like on a bus, or in a restaurant, or even in a church.
In schools, 78% of transgender students report discrimination by faculty and other students.
90% of transgender people, like my child, report discrimination in housing.
19% of the members of the transgender community report not being able to secure medical treatment.
The HIV infection rate is four times higher than the national average for transgender communities.
No one should have to fear for the safety, health, and well-being of their loved ones, like I do.
Like I do.
Like I do. All people deserve the right to be treated fairly.
It's time we turn tolerance into acceptance.
Protect our loved ones.
Protect my friends.
Protect my congregants.
Protect my family.
Protect my coworkers.
Protect my dad.
Protect my neighbors.
Protect my loved ones.
Protect my clients.
love and protect our transgender community.
Protect everyone.
Protect everyone.
Protect everyone.
Stand with us. End discrimination. End the violence.
Be an ally.
Be an ally.
Be an ally.
En fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie, et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi, éperdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi désemparé.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Radio is in our final week of fundraising through the Give Guide. You can show your support by December 31st.